Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. At the COP23 Climate Summit in Bonn, Germany, more than 100 climate activists interrupted the only official U.S. delegation forum, which was led by gas, oil, and coal executives. For 2 weeks, delegates from 195 countries discussed the implementation of the 2015 Paris Summit's landmark emissions reduction agreement. Developing countries and those on the front lines of climate change were negotiating with industrial nations to come up with concrete steps to stop the planet from getting hotter. The United States stood alone as the only nation to push for the expansion of oil, gas, and coal. At that formal U.S. forum that was led by execs from oil, gas, and coal, young people stood up in the room, started singing, and then they walked out, leaving the room mostly empty. So on today's Your Call, it's our One Planet series, and we're going to talk about how young people are leading the fight against climate change at a time when the United States is totally isolated in this fight. Today, we are joined by Kyle Lemley. He was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain Us. He is also the founder and co-director of the Thrive Choir. That's an interfaith gospel choir for social and environmental justice, and the Thrive Street Choir, which is organizing hundreds to sing at marches and rallies across California and beyond. And Kyle Lemley joins us from Germany. Hi, Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Well, Kyle, hopefully your line will be okay. He's joining us from Germany. We'll see how it goes. We're also joined by Charlie Jiang. He attended the conference as a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain Us to the UN Climate Talks. Charlie is program associate at the Environmental Defense Fund and a founding member of the D.C. Reinvest Coalition. That's a group pressuring the D.C. government to divest from banks with ties to fossil fuel companies. Charlie is one of this winter year's Brower Youth Award winners, and he joins us from D.C. Hi, Charlie. Thank you for joining us again.
Hey, Rose. Good to be back on the show.
Great to have you back. Well, Charlie, I want to start off with you. Give us a sense of what this conference was like. You know, you see it in the media. There are lots of activists. At this particular conference, there were delegates from nearly 200 companies, lots of different forums, lots of street actions. Overall, what was it like for you?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'll say is that these conferences, these COPs, are incredibly intensive experiences. The physical space is basically a gigantic conference center with 20,000 or so delegates from all across the world. You have negotiators and diplomats from the countries. You have youth and civil society advocates and business representatives all coming together in this space. And it's an incredibly intensive environment because basically the world has 2 weeks each year, notwithstanding some sort of meetings throughout the course of the year, to really come together and try and negotiate the future of our planet. And so people come in with their sleeves rolled up and ready to go, and we enter that space with ours as well, ready to go.
Why did you decide to go, Charlie, and what did you hope to accomplish?
You know, this is my second conference. I was a student in Paris in 2015 when the Paris Agreement was signed and a historic moment happened. And this conference felt significant to me because it's the first one under President Trump. It's the first one after the U.S. has signified its will withdraw from the Paris Agreement. And so it was a really historic moment for young people across the U.S. to attend and say directly to the Trump administration in Bonn that we are not with you, that we are committed to moving forward, and we the people are still in disagreement even as you go out. It's an important message to send to the world that's trying to put into practice the promises of Paris, and it's an important message to send to folks back home who are listening and watching and figuring out where they should step up this year and next year.
Kyle, you are in Germany, and the conference was in Bonn, Germany. Overall, what was the experience like for you?
It was incredible, incredibly intense and joyful. It was just a beautiful experience to meet other young people and other delegates from all around the world. And it was just powerful to represent the interests of the majority of the U.S. who are interested in staying in Paris. So it kind of felt like the hero's journey for the 15 of us to go along with all of our partner organizations, indigenous groups, grassroots groups, and stand beside them as the U.S. is pulling out of the agreement. Yeah.
Can you both talk about how you connect with other activists? Because the one thing that's so interesting to watch is when you've got different delegations from around the world who, in a fairly short amount of time, it seems, are together protesting or singing. How does that work, Kyle, behind the scenes? How do you all organize and decide what sort of actions you want to take?
Yeah, well, it's really rapid response organizing. Whereas, you know, on the ground in the U.S., just with our home organizations doing community organizing work, it takes a long time to develop these strong relationships and the trust required to move forward anything. I worked for Friends of the Urban Forest in San Francisco as an organizer, and it just takes it takes time to develop these strong partner relationships, and can take months even to host a single tree planting in San Francisco. But in Bonn, we only have 2 weeks together to leverage these strong relationships to do action. But I think everyone is under the same time crunch, and you quickly realize who is on your team and who's not. Most of the young people and most of the young delegations and the grassroots delegations are usually on the same team. And there's different coalitions on the ground, and we are part of the coalition to demand climate justice, so which automatically linked us to hundreds of different grassroots organizations that are demanding climate justice around the world and very progressive and rapid movement on climate action to keep emissions low and temperature rise to under 1.5 degrees Celsius. So whereas other coalitions and maybe other of the larger nonprofits are more lenient and just interested in the slow incremental change, we could mobilize quickly for the quick changes that we're needing. So we essentially for the main action we did, we just put out a call over WhatsApp and using just text message for rapid organizing, just putting out the invitation, having rapid trainings, and then doing the actions in the afternoons or evenings.
Charlie, what would you add to that about organizing behind the scenes and just what the experience is like meeting so many activists from around the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely thrilling. And, you know, a couple of things I'd say. The first is that the relationships that we were able to build in the lead up to COP were incredibly important for us to do this work successfully. You know, there are organizations of young people and civil society from across the world that were really important to reach out to and try and build that rapport with, which we did really well, I thought. The second thing is that COP is really a space where everyone, even though people have really diverse interests, diverse visions for the world, are all there with a common purpose. And this Trump administration event, this coal promotion panel, was the antithesis of everything that this entire conference was fighting for. And so it was really quite straightforward for us to say, hey, there's this panel that is trying to promote coal at a climate conference. Everyone here should know that that's a bad idea. We have a plan for how we're going to disrupt it. Are you on board? And what we saw was an incredibly diverse and huge number of people, indigenous leaders, young people, students from the U.S., young leaders from Europe and Australia and the Global South, scientists and civil society advocates, all came together in that moment in response to our call that we put out over our networks to stand up and basically say no. This is not the moment for this.
Kyle, what did you learn from other activists, especially activists who are from small island nations who, I mean, everyone's feeling the effects of climate change, but this is definitely not equal. What about people from Fiji, for example? What did you learn from other activists?
I just learned that others have a lot more to lose than we do. Obviously, there's many delegations and young people from Pacific Island nations. I met some delegates on the train from Micronesia, and it's just really sad and powerful speaking with them, whose entire livelihoods, histories, and cultures are threatened by sea level rise. And yeah, I just learned the strong determination and resilience they have. I mean, just the ones I talked to weren't they weren't as angry as I was or some of the other delegates on our team. They just seemed kind of more dignified and resolute. That it just seems kind of obvious what's at stake for them. But what was incredible is that just so many young people around the world were just all bound by this issue. This issue stretches across borders. It stretches across cultures and religions. And so it's just powerful to share the space with so many, you know, people speaking tons of different languages, different ways of being, but who are all committed to the same vision of a world that is at all similar to the world that our grandparents inherited.
Hmm.
Our delegation partnered with Engajo Mundo, this amazing organization in Brazil, and APMDD, this awesome grassroots organization in the Philippines, and we hosted an interfaith global solidarity vigil to mourn the past and future lives lost to climate change. And this was just one of the events that was incredibly powerful. We occupied this space in the middle of the exhibition hall to light some fake candles and to sing and to drum and just to we were wearing our suits, but we thought that it was important to bring in the humanity and bring in the soul of the world into such a space that kind of strips you of your humanity and prefers you to look like a robot. And we all came together in this moment, and it was just powerful. People were crying and sharing stories of folks that they've lost, and people spoke from West Africa, from Indonesia, from the Himalayas, to the Caribbean, and just such similar stories of loss all around the world.
Wow. Charlie, what about you? What would you add?
Yeah, I mean, each COP is hosted by a particular country. In Paris, it was France. This is the first COP that was hosted by a small island state, Fiji, even though it was held in Germany for logistical reasons. And you know, the story that needs to be told about this COP is that small island states, these tiny countries that are low-lying and have the most to lose from climate change, are really stepping up and taking leadership in a way that we've never seen before. You know, they are the very existence of the friends that we made from these island nations is threatened, but they're there, and they're saying that we are not drowning, we are fighting, we are leading the way towards this brighter future, and we're going to do everything we can to help bring along the rest of the world and make sure everyone sees the urgency of what is happening with the impacts of rising seas, of saltwater intrusion on these islands that are destroying food and freshwater sources, of these more intense storms that have ravaged islands from the Pacific to the Caribbean, just like including Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands on our own shores. These are islands that are leaders that are the true moral voices of this crisis, and it's our job to listen to them and to respond accordingly and to recognize the role that we as U.S. citizens, as young people, as people from the developed world have to play in mitigating what has happened.
Charlie Jiang attended the climate conference in Bonn as a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain U.S. to the U.N. Climate Talks. Charlie is a program associate at the Environmental Defense Fund, and he is one of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. We're also joined by Kyle Lemley, also a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain Us. He's founder and co-director of the Thrive Choir, an interfaith gospel choir for social and environmental justice. And today we are getting a report back from the climate conference in Bonn, Germany. What questions do you have for our guests today, Kyle and Charlie? We'd love to hear from you. And if you have any questions about what happened there, it got some coverage. It always deserves more coverage. But what questions do you have? What about our responsibility to the next generation? If you followed the talks, if you were there, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And the United States was very isolated this year. We've got climate deniers in the White House, and the only official forum at the climate change conference was led by executives from the coal, oil, and gas industries. And young people were in the room. They stood up, started singing, and then they left the room, leaving it mostly empty. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's talk about that action, which got international headlines. And Kyle, you wrote a piece for Truthout about your experience at that forum, and you write that George David Banks, the special assistant to Trump on energy and environment, sat on a panel beside Francis Brooke, a policy advisor to Mike Pence. Alongside him were representatives of coal producer Peabody Energy Corporation, Nuclear Energy Engineering Company, NuScale Power, and the liquefied natural gas company Tellurian Incorporated. You write that the energy in the room was intense and very uncomfortable. After 20 minutes of listening to their lies, you write, I could not take it anymore, so I opened my mouth and started to sing. What were these? I think there were three men and two women, right? What were they saying? What were they talking about?
They were talking about how they were trying to make us feel ashamed of ourselves, as if we were halting progress by trying to move away from fossil fuels. They were trying to just espouse the belief that we are tethered to fossil fuels forever, that the only way that nations of the global south will develop and that they'll be able to feed their children and have a reasonable life is to have a future with fossil fuels. And so, they were sneaky with their argument in just trying to say that we were the greedy ones, and we were the ones that were, in our ivory tower and away from the realities of life on the ground where fossil fuels are so important. But this is what they want us to believe. They want us to believe that we are addicted and completely, tied to the fossil fuel industry, that there is no chance of us breaking free from fossil fuels. But the truth is, and what scientists across the world are knowing, and now what the industry experts are telling us, is that renewable energy is ready to go. It's becoming just as cheap as fossil fuels, and that if we invest the same amount of resource and energy and innovation into renewable energy, we can break free and get to zero fossil fuels by 2050.
I want to play a clip from David Banks. He is he's Trump's climate advisor. And at the conference, Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman questioned David Banks. According to the Energy and Policy Institute, this is a watchdog that exposes attacks on renewable energy. David Banks, again, who's Trump's climate advisor, once worked as the D.C. liaison for the Alliance for Wise Decisions. This is a coalition founded by the anti-wind and climate skeptic John Draws Jr. David Banks, according to this website, has embraced unscientific conspiracy theories. And Amy Goodman asked him if he believes humans have anything to do with climate change and the warming planet.
Oh, so from an administration perspective, I think the president would say that climate is always changing.
Do you believe that human beings are involved with climate change?
Do I? Why are you so interested in what I...
You're the representative of the Trump administration here. You're the first person we've been able to speak to here about the Trump administration position.
I think the administration would agree that humans contribute to climate change, right? I think the question, and by the way, this is not...
So do you disagree with the president that climate change is a Chinese hoax?
Look, I work for the president of the United States, and I support the president's decisions, right? I supported the president's decision when it came to withdrawing from the Paris Agreement, right? The president...
So do you believe it's a Chinese hoax?
Do I believe it's a Chinese
climate hoax? Climate change. I'm just quoting the president of the United States.
I think you're missing the point of the tweet. Mm. I mean, look...
Explain it.
Oh, no, the point of the tweet was, again, we talked a little bit about this last night, the president views climate change through the lens of, or climate change policy through the lens of, what does this do to U.S. manufacturing? What does it do to U.S. competitiveness? Right? And so, given his focus on trade, right?
Well, that is Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman questioning Donald Trump's climate advisor, David Banks, who once worked with the Alliance for Wise Decisions. This is a coalition founded by an anti-wind and climate skeptic named John Draws. This is according to the Energy and Policy Institute, a watchdog exposing attacks on renewable energy. And this was one of the guys who was at the only formal U.S. Forum at the climate conference. And Kyle, I listened to this clip a couple times and just didn't really make sense of any of it. What was the response in the audience when they heard David Banks kind of spew nonsense? I mean, it just didn't make sense.
Right. I mean, this was to be expected. It's Trump's administration. We knew about who this guy was and who they were putting on the panel, and just the general feeling in the room was we were just so embarrassed that this is who our country sent. Our country didn't send scientists, you know. Our country didn't send bold leaders. Our country sent folks who are taking money directly from the fossil fuel industry to silence the truth on climate change. The Trump administration deleted all of their messaging on climate change from the EPA website. They're silencing their own employees from using the term climate change at public debates. So of course this is who they sent. So we were prepared for battle, and you know, we didn't let it go on before we made our voices heard.
Charlie, what was your response when you heard this panel?
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, the fossil industry has spent millions of dollars over the years trying to cast doubt on the science of climate change. You know, we know that we have the solutions with renewables and with other resources to stop climate change. Yet for the U.S. to show up in their only panel to be about the role of fossil fuels was ridiculous. You know, why... And absolutely, as Kyle said, what we expected was an administration that has spent the last few months trying to roll back every rule that addresses clean air and climate pollution. And so we knew that the response that we had to do was not try and shout arguments back at them that were for us. We know that we have the winning arguments. What we needed to do was show them and show the world that we see it through their lies and that we are going to call them out with the dignity that we wanted to show.
Kyle, according to reports, the majority of the people in the room listening to this U.S. official forum were young activists. Did you all have any difficulties in getting into these forums, especially this U.S. Forum that was attended by the people on the panel? It was a Trump executive, a Pence executive, and then executives from coal, gas, and oil companies. Did you have any difficulty getting in the room?
So we planned in advance. We knew that it would be really popular. Everyone was talking about this panel, how embarrassing it was, how hilarious it really was, the irony of it, even though it's a really serious issue. So we actually got there 2 hours in advance. To make sure that we could stay, you know, put our people in the room, because we wanted to fill the room with our people. We wanted every single seat in the room to walk out. And so all activists from around the world joined us in line about 2 hours before. The line stretched through the entire hall. It stretched on and on and on. It was incredible, the amount of response. We put out the call the day before, and about 300 people came. We got 100 people in the room. They first filled the room with their own friends of the oil and gas and coal and nuclear power industry. So they had their friends in the front row, the media in the back, and we occupied pretty much every other seat we could. We were the first people. Then once every seat was filled, they closed the door, and there were still about 200 other activists from around the world who remained outside and were shouting and protesting during the event. We were inside, and as David Banks was speaking, you could hear the cheers and the chants outside the door of the room, which just made the energy in the room so much more intense being in there. But then as soon as we started singing, about 20 minutes into the panel, as soon as we opened our mouth and stood up as young people from around the world singing directly at these fossil fuel executives, the chanters outside stopped chanting. they all crowded around someone's phone who had the live stream of Inside the Room on it. And then once after we occupied the room for about 10 minutes of dignified singing, we walked out to cheers and greetings and just like incredible response from folks around the world. And we then held a rally right outside the room.
Kyle, what were some of the lyrics in the song that you all sang?
So we adapted Proud to Be an American, a really famous country song in the U.S., and we adapted the lyrics just asking them, instead of, are you proud to be an American? We asked them, so you claim to be an American, but we see right through your greed. It's killing all across the world for that coal money, and we proudly stand up until you keep it in the ground. We, the people of the world, unite, and we are here to stay. I didn't feel like singing it for you just now, but there's a million clips. You can find it online. And we essentially just wanted to frame the question to them, like asking them, like, so you really claim to be an American, when they're really just up there fighting for the 0.01%, you know, the richest people in the country who are profiting off of the fossil fuel industry at the expense of 99.9% of folks from the U.S. and everyone else across the world. They're really just pocketing, you know, billions and billions of dollars at the expense of our health, our clean environment. And so, you know, for me as an American, I am proud. I'm not proud of so much of our history, but I'm proud of our country. I believe that we can be leaders in this fight for climate justice around the world. We can change. It's disrespectful to the spirit of innovation here in America that we can't adapt to the changing times. You know, we phased out the typewriter. We phased out the Model T. We can't phase out fossil fuel. So I believe that America has a role to play as a leader in this movement, that we can't be go into hiding and be denialists against everyone across the world. So that's why we chose to use a popular American song and sing it to them.
Kyle Lemley was a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation and a youth delegate with Sustain U.S. to the U.N. Climate Talks. Charlie Jiang also attended the conference as a delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation. And they both stood up at the only formal U.S. forum, which was led by executives from oil, gas, and coal companies. They stood up, they started singing, and then they walked out, leaving the room mostly empty. On today's Your Call, it's our One Planet series, and we are getting a report back from young climate activists about the climate change conference that took place recently in Bonn, Germany. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about why the demand for avocados has increased over the years and what this is doing to deforestation in Mexico. It's causing mass deforestation in Mexico. So we'll be talking about avocado demand tomorrow. And then on Wednesday, a very important conversation about the Republican tax cut bill for the wealthy and corporations. The House bill has already passed. The Senate is expected to vote on the bill this Thursday. And today there are sit-ins and demonstrations outside of the offices of John McCain, Jeff Flake, Lisa Murkowski, Susan Collins, Rob Portman, Shelley Moore Capito, and I think that's about it. Those are the only senators, and Bob Corker, those are the senators that are on the fence. The Republicans, if three vote no, then it will not pass. If two vote no, then Mike Pence will break the tie. It's really important, so I hope you can tune in on Wednesday. Today, it is our One Planet series, and we're getting a report back from young climate activists who went to the climate change conference in Bonn, Germany. Kyle Lemley and Charlie Jiang attended the conference as delegates with the U.S. People's Delegation. And now I would like to welcome Daisy Romero, who also attended with the U.S. People's Delegation to the U.N. She's a member of Local Governments for Sustainability and 350.org, and she lives in Hayward. Hi, Daisy. Welcome to the show. Do we have Daisy? All right. We will connect with Daisy in just a minute. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Kyle, before the break, we were talking about the forum that you all attended, the only forum that was a U.S. official forum. When you all left, the room was empty at that point. I mean, do you know what happened in the room? Did they continue talking?
So yeah, they continued talking if they weren't a little shocked as we were exiting. But I think the room eventually did fill back up just with some other folks who had hoped to get inside. But what I heard from those who stayed in the room to hear what they would say after we left is that, you know, our protest really changed the power dynamic in the room. After we left, it just riled up everyone else in the audience, and journalists, and others. And they just fired off questions directly at the panelists that were just seething and just trying to get at the truth and underneath their lies. People were heckling them from inside. So I think that we really broke the ice and opened the floodgates for the room to really just put them in the spotlight and tell them how much they really didn't belong at a climate conference. Mm.
And Charlie, what would you say was the overall feel of the conference at a time when the United States is completely isolated?
Yeah, you know, this conference really had two stories going on. The first is about the actual negotiations in which diplomats were trying to develop the rules for how this Paris Agreement would come into practice, how countries would commit to increasing their commitments to stop climate change over the years. And that was a story that was actually pretty routine. You know, there's a lot of work that still has to be done that we are looking to in 2018 and beyond that, and are hopeful and encouraging other countries to step up their game. The other story was exactly the story that we waded into the middle of with our sinning walkout, the story of Trump and of what other countries in the world were going to do about the U.S. stepping back from this accord. And that story was really one that I think was told in a way that demonstrated the world is moving ahead, that what the Trump administration represents is a backwards ideology that has no place in the world today, and that what we really need are people who are committed to addressing the climate crisis and protecting the health and well-being of all people. And that's the story that we wanted to tell, and that's the story that got told.
Well, now I would like to welcome Daisy Romero to the show. Hi, Daisy. Are you with us?
Hi, yes.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us. So, Daisy, you also were a youth delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation. What was your overall experience at the climate change conference in Bonn? What stood out for you?
I was with the United States People's Delegation, ICLEI specifically, which is the local government for sustainability. So what I did was basically share my experiences at an event that we held. It was called the United States People's Delegation Scout. So what I did was just give my experiences on the internship and work that I did in the past. So I'm from South Hayward, California. I witnessed poverty, poor air quality, and the lack of resources and opportunities for low-income people of color. And I just wanted to give my perspective on what was going on in my community and give people an idea what it's like and give my community a voice. So basically, I just talked about an internship I did with ICLEI. I talked about the program that I was a part of, which was a workshop to low-income areas that were affected by climate change. And I also gave another example of another program that I did, which was with a nonprofit organization named Ecology Action. And what I did there was do door-to-door outreach and provide them with the tools such as shower heads that were water efficient just to save them money and make the environment a little more environmentally friendly.
I understand that you suffer from asthma, like so many people in the Bay Area and around the greater Bay Area. Can you tell us a little bit more about what your community in South Hayward faces, specifically how they're affected by poor air quality?
Definitely. So there's a tool, it's called the Cal Enviro Screen. It states in the rates of climate change related issues and factors. So Hayward specifically is in the orange zone. It's categorized by colors, which means it's the second worst polluted area, specifically approximately 76% to 80%, and 45% above the countywide rate of asthma hospitalization, also higher than average temperatures for air quality. So what we did there was try to target those specific areas and do what we can at a local level to help combat these issues.
And you also lead bilingual workshops covering topics like water conservation, recycling, energy. Can you tell us about that experience and how the community has responded?
Right. So with that experience, I was doing an internship with ICLEI, and that was the Unite to Green program that I did. So we went to an area of Hayward that was affected by climate change. It's called the Jackson Triangle area. And there I spoke about water conservation, energy efficiency, and I provided them with tools to help them do better in their homes, and also compost, and just learn so that they could also educate other members of the community as well as their families.
You all have stories about what's happening in your hometowns. Charlie, when you were young in Chicago, you and your brother would build structures out of snow, but you have said in various interviews that when you went home for the holidays last year, there was no snow in Chicago. In fact, the summers are getting much hotter.
That's right. I mean, it's, you know, what's important to understand is that the impacts of our warming world are going to impact everyone differently, and some people are, their very lives are threatened. Others, like me, are fortunate enough that I think, you know, we'll be okay for the most part, but even my family is seeing these impacts with hotter summers in our hometowns of Chicago and winters with no snow. And I'm just wondering what that means for my kids if I move back there. What will they have, what will their experiences be like in the summers playing outside, or in the winters looking for snow that isn't there anymore?
There's so much documentation out now and so many more reports about how climate change disproportionately affects low-income communities and communities of color. Do you think, Kyle, that this is getting more attention at the big conferences like the Climate Change Conference in Germany?
You know, maybe a little bit, but not enough. That's why we're part of the Coalition to Demand Climate Justice, which is not a majority group. It's a smaller group of grassroots communities from around the world to really frame climate change as a justice issue. The fact that rich countries like the U.S. and Europe, who are the largest emitters of carbon historically and to the present day, that they should take responsibility for the impacts that low-income people and people of color are facing across the world. And right now, it's not framed as an issue of justice. It's really hard. I mean, Charlie can talk more about the finance, the policy models and the financing structures that would be really required to make this an issue of equity. But at the moment, those are so slow moving, and it's really not being talked about in the level that it should be.
What would you add, Daisy?
I definitely agree with that. I think we need to do more, but we're doing what we can at a local level and trying to share our experiences like we did at the Speak Out of what's going on in our communities, and just engaging and networking with other organizations and other efforts that people are doing.
Daisy, what was your experience like meeting activists from different parts of the world and really different parts of the community, the country? In one video, I saw a young woman from Flint speak out about the fact that they're still drinking out of bottled, they're still getting their water from bottled water.
It was really eye-opening to see all the activists coming together and talking about what was going on. For example, there was a woman from Puerto Rico, and she gave her experiences on the natural disaster that occurred, and it was just so amazing to see like what she is doing, but also that the government should also step up more to help these people.
Daisy, do you feel like the bigger green groups are listening to young activists, specifically young activists of young people of color?
I sure do hope so, but I believe, like I said, we need to do more to fight these issues that's happening.
And what changes specifically, Daisy, would you like to see for your community as South Hayward struggles with things like, you know, there's so much there, poverty, air quality, lack of opportunity, just basic resources?
Right. Moving forward, I hope Hayward is able to get more resources and funding for programs like the ones that I've been a part of, just to provide them with the tools and resources for them. and also just to get more engagement and networking with other organizations so that we can all get connected and fight the issues that are happening.
You know, Daisy, just talking to you, it makes me realize that when we do shows about the environment, you know, you often bring on the big groups, right? And they're from San Francisco or Washington or New York. What else do you want people to know about Hayward? I mean, I'm guessing a lot of people tuning in don't know much about what happens in Hayward unless they live there or live near there.
Yeah, so in Hayward, there's a lot of poverty in certain areas, and a lot of people can't afford, you know, water-efficient tools and things of that nature. So what I hope is just to get more resources for those people.
And what did you bring back with you, Daisy? What are you planning to do with what you learned in Bonn and apply it to what you're doing in Hayward?
Networking with all those people and learning about the stories really inspired me to continue fighting. Recently, I got hired with Waste Management and continue to do more outreach and environmental education.
That's great. Well, Daisy, we'd love to have you back in the new year, and hopefully you can come to the studio and let us know what you're working on.
Okay, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, thank you for joining us. That's Daisy Romero. She's a youth delegate with the U.S. People's Delegation to the UN Climate Talk. She's a member of 350.org, and she lives in South Hayward, where so many people in her community, including Daisy, suffer from asthma. And joining us for the rest of the hour, Kaya Lemley and Charlie Jiang were both delegates with the U.S. People's Delegation at the Climate Conference in Bonn, Germany. And if you have any questions or comments for them, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also give us a call at 866-798-8255. Charlie, same question to you. What are you bringing back home with you from these climate talks, and what's next for you?
Yeah. At COP23, we saw the world was there, and what we saw was inadequate. There is so much more work to be done. And so I'm bringing back a call to action for people in my communities in Chicago and D.C., in the Bay Area and across the country to step up our game. And what that looks like is a couple things. First, we really need to get involved in electing candidates in 2018 and 2020 that actually will stand up for the health and well-being of all people and do what we need to stop this crisis. So I'm working with a group called Sunrise, with Sustain Us, and with other organizations like the Power Shift Network to identify candidates who will be champions on climate change and put ourselves to work getting them into office and connecting them to our movement.
What about you, Kyle?
The other thing...
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Charlie.
I was just going to say the other thing is continuing to tell the stories of communities that are most deeply impacted by these issues, whether it's from asthma or rising seas or increasing wildfires in the Bay, and really highlighting these impacts and highlighting the leadership that local communities are taking to solve this in their own communities.
And what about you, Kyle?
So I still haven't processed all the incredible lessons that I learned in Bonn, but I'm bringing home just a even stronger determination to fight for the future of our planet and just for future generations and folks who are already experiencing these issues now. I live in Oakland. I grew up in Marin County, so I've lived in the Bay Area my whole life, and you know, I was there when the fires were raging in Sonoma and Napa County, and you know, I housed my friend Abigail, who lost her land in Santa Rosa during the fires. You know, we were quarantined inside for 3 days because the air quality was so hazardous to literally go outside and walk the streets of our city. And climate change is just threatening everywhere. You know, we would read stories in the news about these hurricanes, and it seemed like a far-off issue until a week later when these fires were just raging across our state and almost reached us here in Oakland. So, you know, with climate change comes more risk of stronger wildfires, higher frequency of wildfires, which is just one of the many issues that will come to our shores here in the Bay Area. And I'm really not interested in a world that will go up in flames. I'm not interested in being complacent. and just letting the issues, just letting the effects of climate change just get worse and worse. My goal is to continue to go back home and rile up my communities here in the U.S. to frame climate change as a social justice issue. I think people, you know, are often associate climate change with, you know, standard white environmentalist groups that frame it as an issue for polar bears and as a, you know, issue affecting just marginal species around the world. I think what we're starting to wake up to, but what I really want to continue to give my energy to is just framing it as this social justice issue that it affects people and it affects you and me and everyone who's not the 0.1%. President Trump can hide in his tower. He can afford to adapt to climate change in a way that the rest of us can't. That's my goal. And going home, I was really inspired to see how powerful music and art and spirit can be in such a dehumanizing space. So I'm going to go back home to the Thrive Choir based in Oakland and the Thrive Street Choir here in the Bay Area. We've already mobilized a few hundred people to join our street choir, to show up in streets at gatherings, at direct actions, at protests, at marches. And I think that after we received international headlines with doing a singing protest, a vocal blockade at the White House event, I'm more inspired than ever to just continue using that tactic to show that these are humans experiencing these issues, not radical fringe leftist groups, but real humans that just are advocating for a just and sustainable world for everybody. So I hope to have music and singing just be one of the many tactics that folks are using on the ground to ask for what we deserve.
Well, let's hear from Marie Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie Louise. Welcome to the show. Hi, are you there? Marie Louise, I hear you. Nope, okay. sorry about that. We have an email from Kate who says, I'm 24 and I attended the conference, the 17, 18, 19, 21, when I was in school with Earth in Brackets. I was wondering what your guests' perspective are in terms of other issues like adaptation and loss and damage. She says that at the 2007 negotiations, the United States was isolated again, and then things changed when Obama came into office because there was so much pressure on the administration to actually take action. Kyle, do you have anything to say about adaptation and loss and damage?
You know, I think Charlie's... I do, but I think Charlie is your guy for that question.
Okay, Charlie?
Yeah, I guess for background for folks, the climate conferences each year talk about really three big buckets of issues. One is mitigation, what are countries doing to reduce their emissions, move to cleaner energy. The other is adaptation, which is what are countries doing to build infrastructure that is going to be resilient to the impacts of climate change that we are seeing. And the third is loss and damage, which is a relatively new issue that got on the agenda in Paris and is part of the Paris Agreement. And that's been a really controversial one, but it's really simple. It's what are countries going to do about people's homes that are destroyed by climate change and need to be rebuilt? That's the damage part. Or to compensate folks for some of the irreparable harms that are being done to them, whether it's to cultural heritage, for example, that's the loss part. And what we've seen so far is that countries, including the U.S., are really opposed to providing the necessary financial resources and other resources to address loss and damage and adaptation, in part because it's going to cost money. But it's really our responsibility as the United States, which has been the biggest contributor to this crisis, which has housed so many fossil fuel industry executives and billionaires that have tried to profit off of this crisis, it's our responsibility to contribute our resources in a way that will help communities across the world that are under-resourced and facing the impacts of this crisis to give them what they need to adapt and to recover from the damages that are already being done.
And Kyle, before we let you go, Did anything stand out for you in terms of changes happening in other countries that you would like to see happen in the United States?
I think that what stood out for me is that nations of the global South are stepping up, you know, to even cut emissions in a way that we in the U.S. are not willing to do. You know, we see nations across Europe investing tons of resources into green energy projects. You know, entire cities that are eliminating fossil fuels from their infrastructure. There's just so many examples of countries across the world that are adapting the new technologies that are really moving forward. And we're really just keeping ourselves in the Stone Age, and we're really just shooting ourselves in the foot in a future that will be run by renewable energy. So we just need to stop our own government, unfortunately, our own federal government, from silencing the truth, from just keeping this issue on the back burner. We need to bring it forward and just join the rest of the world in moving forward.
Well, we're so glad that you were both there, and thank you both for joining us. Kaya Lemley and Charlie Jiang attended the climate conference in Bonn, Germany, as delegates with the U.S. People's Delegation. Kyle is founder and co-director of the Thrive Choir, and Charlie is program associate at the Environmental Defense Fund. Kyle and Charlie, thank you both for joining us.
Our pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And you can find more information about the conference and check out the song that they sang at yourcallradio.org. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter at yourcallradio. Email show ideas and feedback to yourcall@kalw.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Lauren Schechter is our social media producer, and Carolyn Blotzheim is our intern. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.